Okay, welcome to Discovery 1, Module 5, Revision Part 3, 2, 2 even. Okay. And we're doing more subnet revision. We're going over the subnet exercises on the list. Okay, now before I get started on these, does anybody have any questions, generally speaking, about subnetting? Is anybody confused about something? Because there is actually something I haven't told you about subnetting that I probably should have, and we'll get to that in a minute. And they're the networks that you can't actually use, or you shouldn't use if you want to be as compatible with as much equipment as possible. And we'll get to that in a moment. So has anybody got any general questions or want any clarifications on subnetting, apart from asking me for all the answers, because that's not going to happen, at least unless we work through them, that they would like answered before we go on to do these exercises, which are not like any exercises you've ever seen before? Okie dokie, now we're on push to talk, and away we go. So that's cutting out on me, silly thing. Okay.
Okay, I'll disappear.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, see some of you later.
You will see some of us later. And you'll be able to have a spearmint milkshake.
Oh, it'll be another coffee, I think, today.
Well, you can have a coffee and a spearmint milkshake, all at the same time. Okay, see you later.
Bye.
And off goes my wife to do whatever she has now. Okay, we have the first exercise is asking us 192.91.33.0/24. It's a Class C subnet. Can anybody tell me what the maximum number of hosts? You can type it into chat. No, we're not having trigger fingers on the talk button. How many hosts can we maximally have on a Class C subnet? Okay, we have one answer. Any idea, Scott? Or are you on the phone? Okay, are you saying that because everybody else has said it, or are you saying that because that's what you think it is? I'm just making sure everybody knows what a Class C subnet is before we go on, because otherwise these exercises are going to be very difficult. So a Class C subnet is a network with a subnet mask of 255.255.255.0. Or if we are using CIDR notation, /24. In other words, 24 bits in the network portion, 8 bits in the host portion. Everybody cool with that?
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Now, let's see. We want to create 4 subnets, and they're going to have 25 machines on each network site. Very symmetrical company, this one, but I decided to make the first one a bit simple. So all up, that's going to be 4 times 25, which is 100 machines. Funny that. That's how many machines the company has. And we want to... We don't expect the subnets to expand beyond 25. Can anybody tell me, or does anybody want to talk about what reasoning they might use to figure out how big the subnets are going to be? How many IP addresses will we have to have at a minimum on each subnet? Can anybody tell me? Hang on, are you giving me the slash notation for the subnet mask? In other words, are you saying /27, or are you saying 27 IP addresses?
27 IP addresses.
Okay. Yeah, all right. What is the smallest subnet that can accommodate 27 addresses? We are all aware that a subnet has to be a power of 2 in its size. In other words, if you are subnetting as subnets, you've got to have powers of 2. Yeah, you're right. I'm not arguing that it isn't a /27 subnet address. I'm just working my way there, down the garden path and over the fence and across the creek and all that sort of thing, okay? So we want... subnets. So what's the smallest power of 2 that will allow us to have 25 IP addresses on the subnet? In other words, Okay, we have one answer from Grace and we have one answer from Alex. And just to keep something interesting, I'm not even going to tell you who's right and who's wrong. Yet. Anyone else got an answer for me? Is anybody having trouble figuring out how we'd work this out? Okie dokie. No problem. Well, I mean, this is what I need to know, guys, because I've got to be able to tell you the right things and actually sort of say, well, you know, let's work through this bit and that bit, rather than sitting there and going, oh, this is all so simple. I don't know how you all can't subnet. I mean, I've been doing it for years. That's not very helpful. So, all right, you want to know, you've got a subnet that has 25 machines per subnet. You need the smallest power of 2 that will contain the number of IP addresses you want minus 2. Remember, there are 2 reserved IP addresses, one for the network address and one for the broadcast address. Does everybody remember that from last week? Okie dokie, so we want 25 IP addresses. What is the smallest power of 2 that is greater than 25? Do I have to sing the inchworm song?
Oh, I see, so it's greater than 25.
Yes, and otherwise you wouldn't fit it on the subnet.
Yep, okay, I'm now following. Go.
So the smallest power of 2 we've got that we're going to be able to use is 32. So we have an IP subnet with 32 IP addresses, well, 32 addresses. How many usable IP addresses on that network? Okie dokie. Now, I realise it's probably going to upset you guys a bit if I tell you at this point that I'm actually taking you through more subnetting stuff than you are actually supposed to do in Discovery 1. Yeah, I know, you'll all come and shoot me. But I'd really rather you guys be good at this and actually know what you're doing rather than sort of not be very good at it and then come through later and go, why didn't he tell me all this other stuff? Okie dokie. So 30 IP addresses. And there's on the subnet of 32 addresses. And Aaron has aptly pointed out that it is 2 to the power of 5. 2 to the power of 5 equals 30. I think 32 even. 2 to the power of 5 is 32. And you are going to have, and this is important. So, we've got a Class C subnet. Okay? If we have 8 bits for the host portion and 24 bits for the network portion, which last time I checked added up to 32, if we're going to use 5 bits for the host portion, how many bits are we going to use for subnetting?
3, but... Oh, okay.
Yes, that's correct, Grace, 3.
How do we figure that out then?
5 and 3 is 8. 2 to the power of 5 is the size of the subnet we want.
Oh, okay.
Is it so 32 minus 5?
Okay, let's slow down a bit here because I think I've jumped. Remember how I told you that if you were multiplying powers together, you added and subtracted indices. Okay, so we've got a subnet of whatever the subnet was, I don't care what it was, because I just can't remember. It's written in the other file that I'm not alt-tabbed into. And we have said that there are 24 bits for the network portion and 8 bits for the host portion. We're cool with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okie dokie. Now what we want to do is we want to borrow some bits from the host portion, and we call it borrowing bits, to create subnetworks. So the first thing we do is we figure out how big we want our subnetworks to be. And we've said that we want 32 addresses per subnet, which is 2 to the power of 5. Everyone cool with that?
Yep, this is on the same exercise for our 25 machines. We're going to go for 32 IP addresses.
We have not moved on to a new exercise. We are still on the same exercise. Okay. Now, it stands to reason that because we've got a Class C supernet, and we'll just call it that because it'll do for the moment, we're subnetting the supernet of Class C. So we are slicing up a cake that has 256 addresses. Not 256 usable, but 256 addresses. So we have to decide how many bits we're going to use to make subnets out of, and how many bits we're going to use for hosty bits, right? We've got 8 bits to work with. We've got 5 bits that we're going to use for subnets, like sorry, 5 bits we're going to use for hosts because we want 32 addresses per subnet. We're all happy with that?
So what I want to know is, do you just take whatever, if the address was 64 and you wanted 64 on there, it would be 6 then, and you just take the powers and subtract them?
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Yeah, basically you would. But basically what happens here is we've got 3 bits to do the subnetting, and we've got 5 bits to do the host. And can anybody tell me what 5 plus 3 is?
8.
8.
And how many bits did we have in a class C?
So therefore we get back to 27.
We're not even talking about slash 27 yet, because I'm steering clear of the SIDA notation.
Oh, sorry, no, I've stuffed up.
Okay, so what I'm saying is that we have 8 bits in a class C in the host portion. We are going to use 3 bits to create subnets, and we need 5 bits for the host. Now, the whole point of subnetting is figuring out how many bits we're going to use to create the subnets and how many bits we're going to have left for the hosts.
Question.
Yes?
So we chose 5 because, really, 2 to the power of 5 is 32, and 32 is the number that we're working from.
2 to the power of 5 is 32, and a 32 address subnet is big enough to hold 25 machines.
Got it.
If you had picked, say, 16 or 2 to the power of 4, how do you intend to get 25 machines onto a 16 IP subnet?
Well, we're not. We chose 32 because it's a greater one. So that's what I'm saying. I'm saying the reason we're using 5 is because we had to use 32, because it's the one number that's greater than the 25 IP addresses that we actually need.
That is correct. Okay. So, everybody is telling me about this slash 27. Okay? And that's correct. It is a slash 27 mask if we write it in SIDA notation, CIDR. If we subtract 5 from 32, which is the number of bits in an IP address, what do we get?
27.
Has the halogen just gone on for anyone here?
Yep.
Alrighty. Now, so, the fact is we can't have any more bits than we ever had originally, and so the whole point is robbing from Peter to pay Paul, just to be biblical about it. We need to find out how we're going to distribute the bits between the subnet bits and the actual host bits to give us the right number of hosts on the right number of networks, and we need to get the right number of subnets that we're going to use for our fictitious constructs. Okay, now one of the things I need to point out to you is that when you actually subnet, there are often one or two subnets that are considered unusable. Well, they're not quite unusable, but it's not recommended that you use them. And these are the bottom and top subnets of the range. So if we were to break this into 32 address subnets, how many subnets would we have in total? Anybody else know how we got that? 32 times 8 is 256, which is the number of IP addresses we've got to work with.
Okay.
Yes, 2 to the power of 3 from the 3 remaining bits that we're using to subnet. Now, it's worth mentioning that if in some network environments, IP subnet 0 is considered unusable, so we can't use the range from 0 to 31, and the top subnet is also considered unusable because if you send a broadcast to the top subnet, which is 224 to 255, you cannot distinguish a broadcast to the subnet of 224, it would also turn up on the same broadcast address of the top subnet. Now, has anybody ever seen a problem? Has anybody ever seen a situation where this is actually a problem rather than just theoretically a problem? I'm curious because I have never seen a situation where you couldn't actually use those top and bottom subnets, but then again, I'm running real operating systems.
It's only in Cisco's and only to iOS prior to 12. Even later versions of 11 had an IP subnet zero command.
There is a Cisco command like IP subnet zero.
And I suspect that information is probably out of date as of CCNA 4, which I think is what Discovery is based on.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that up, and I haven't seen Ian sign in, so and I'll email Aubrey or somebody can chase it down for me. Because I was actually taught when we did CCNA that I'm supposed to teach you that the bottom and the top subnets are unusable, so subnet zero and the top subnet. But I'm tempted to actually say you justify which one you're using. I would be saying at this stage that all subnets are usable, but be ready for me to come back and actually correct that in case I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's how it was in 3.1, but CCNA 3 I think was actually designed way back when Cisco was still supporting iOS 11.
Yeah, and I don't think they're even officially supporting 11 anymore, and I thought they were the support cutoff was at 12.
Yeah, it is. 11's been dead for quite some time, but it's still floating around on some older supported devices in boot code.
Yeah, it would be in the okay. Yeah, there is actually a command called IP subnet zero, and if you turn that on, it will allow you to use the bottom subnet. Righty, so we're going to assume that all the subnets are usable for our exercise. So now you can put whatever you want. If you assume that IP subnet 0 is not usable, you just have to say so in your notes and go, subnet 0 not usable, I say there are this many subnets, and I'll mark you right. If you say two subnets are unusable, and I do the calculations and we find out that that you've got the right numbers, then you're correct. So I'll take any of the three answers if you tell me which one you're sticking to, but I will assume that all subnets are usable for these exercises. Okay. And just for your reference, you're welcome to bail at any point when you get bored, Kevin, because you're not actually officially enrolled yet, but you're welcome to stay as long as you want to. So if you fall asleep on the keyboard, we'd rather you bail rather than put random characters into chat. I've never actually fallen asleep on my keyboard yet, but it's been a near thing. Okay, so we have... we are creating four subnets, and we're assuming that... they're going to be 32 address subnets, and that they are going, that zero is going to be usable. Now, can anybody tell me the range of the first subnet? 192.191.33. What to what is for the first subnet? I've got one answer from Aaron. Anybody else want to try this one, or does anybody have any questions?
I'm missing something here, I think.
Quite possibly. Okay. If we start... All right. Did I ever post the subnet example I did to the list, which has got the N's, the B's, and the H's? For the N's for the network addresses, the B for the borrowed bits, and the H's for the host. Does anybody remember seeing that?
I don't believe you did.
I'm going to finish going crunch, crunch, crunch in a minute, but I can't unless I've got sugar. And I'm just... This is the last mouthful, I promise. Right, now I can think. All right. If we look at the if we look at our Class C network, the first three bytes are set out for us, and they are 192.191.33. Then have three bits that are going to set the subnet that we're working on, and we're then going to have five bits that are part of the host portion. Everybody cool with that?
Yeah, but how do you get those different sets of bits?
Yeah, and I'm just seeing whether everybody's cool with that so far before I tell you how we get the different sets of bits. Okay, so we have three bits that we are using for the subnetting. And in this particular instance, the three bits are the most significant three bits on the last byte. Okay. Now, if we have three bits, we can have eight combinations. Can anybody see how that would work? We have 000, 001, 010, 011, 100, 101, 111. Oh, I forgot 110. 110 and then 111. So, okay. So it stands to reason that the borrowed bits in our first subnet are going to be those top three bits in that last byte are going to be 000. Okay? So if we set the bits in the top three bits of the byte to 000, and we have the last five bits, we end up with a range of 0 to 31 because we've hammered those borrowed bits all to 0 for the first subnet. Okay, so the first subnet goes from 0 to 31. Now, the next subnet...
So what does the last byte in the first subnet actually look like?
The last byte in the first subnet is 192.191.33.0/27, which gives you a range of 192.191.33.0 to 192.191.33.31, with 0 being the network address and 31 being the broadcast. Yes, you do have to put the slash 27 because the default subnet mask for an address starting from 192 to 223 in the first octet is a Class C net mask. And unless you specifically override the net mask on your equipment, it's going to default to being a Class C address range. Yes, Alex, 1 to 30 are usable IP addresses on the 192.191.33.0/27 subnet. Now, slash 27 is 255.255.255.224. Because 256 minus 32 is 224. 256 minus 32 is 224. Okay. Anybody got any questions? Anybody still a bit murky here?
So, would the second one, the network address be, the last byte of the network address be 32?
Yes, it would. Because you've set the top three bits to 001, and then you've set the rest of it to 00000. Remember that the network address of any subnet is all of the host bits set to 0. Alright, just because you're in the spotlight at the moment, can you tell me what the third subnet would be, Grace? If the first one is 0 and the next one is 32, what would be the one above that?
Wouldn't it be 64?
Yep. Absolutely correct. Somebody else, tell me what the subnet above that would be.
128?
No, try again. Yep, Aaron's just given you the answer. 96. We're adding 32 each time.
Adding it, yep, got it.
Yep, the next one after that would be 128. And what would be the one after that? 38... Yeah, that's right. Okay, and then above that?
It'll have to be 192.
Yep, that's correct. And then above that, we would have 224. Okay, so the trick... Look, the big trick to this to this whole subnetting thing is you will slog through the first four or five examples, and all of a sudden you'll start to see the patterns of how the binary works and how this power of two and that power of two, and we can add this and that and subtract that from that. And you will suddenly realize how the whole thing fits together and go, oh yeah, coolies. And it'll make it a lot easier. But we actually have to work through the process until you can actually see those patterns. Because if I teach you the patterns without the process, you won't understand how the patterns work.
I'll just add, for anybody who's even remotely considering certification in the future in any of the Cisco courses, subnetting is the most important thing you have to know. If you don't know that, don't even bother.
Oh, I think I said that last week, didn't I? But thank you for reiterating it for me. No pressure, guys, but this is critical knowledge if you want to even think about certification, as Aaron points out. If you can't subnet, don't bother going further with Cisco. Go further with ITE, go further with A+, go further with Microsoft, Apple, whatever. But if you can't subnet, don't go further with Cisco. Because once you get out of Discovery 1, they are going to start assuming that you can subnet. That said, we would like to think that you have some excellent teaching resources to help you along the rocky road of subnetting, and that you will be able to subnet by the end of Discovery 1, or that we will get everybody to be able to do their subnetting so that you can continue as far as you choose to continue.
The other thing too is to learn to do it in your head, as opposed to having to write it down on paper or work with a calculator, because when you get into the exams, you're not allowed to take anything at all in with you. So you do really have to be able to subnet in your head like that.
That is correct, unfortunately. They do not allow you to take anything in with you. Actually, you are... If you're sighted, I think you are allowed scribble paper, but it has to be blank.
No, you can't take anything.
Ah, so even the sighted people can't take scribble paper in?
Not a thing. They do everything apart from pat you down. You can't even take in a bottle of water. If you want water, the examiner has to get it for you.
Ah, interesting. Wow. Do they give you paper, though, if you're in there? Like, do they give you blank paper and a pen, or you don't get that?
I'm not really sure. I didn't ask, but I believe that the sighted person at work who did it just before I did said that you don't even get paper and pen.
I'm going to check into that, because that would make a lot of difference to... I mean, if you can get something to write on, as in, you know, paper and pen or whatever, it is possible that... it is possible that that would be very useful to some of our students, because not everybody is going to have the mental retention to hold all of that information.
Well, you might be able to ask for that as a special consideration, though, having dealt with the 17,000 different special consideration parts of Pearson VUE, I don't hold out much hope.
Yeah, although, to be honest with you, Kevin, none of us know how to use an abacus, so if you want to do a Thursday chat on it at some point, I'll have to dig out my brass abacus from home and figure out how to use those, because they are quite cool.
I've got to remember how to use mine.
I don't even own one.
I actually got a really nice brass one that's got, like, you know, the fives and the twos. Yeah, and it's a little pocket one. It's got about 10 rows, and... Yeah, it's a bit bigger than a business card. It's actually quite nice.
You got one of those little braille ones that were floating around 20 years ago.
Good luck finding one. But I thought, and I don't know whether they do, I thought they used them over in India and stuff sometimes. I mean, they've probably moved to calculators now, but I know they use them in the Arab nations and stuff as well for quick arithmetic and stuff at shops.
Still used a lot in China.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's neither here nor there. We don't want to teach people by quinary this morning. Okay. So, is everybody happy with question one to a degree? I mean, you guys can obviously sit down and write out the subnets for yourselves at some point, but does that sort of demystify question one?
Yeah.
All righty. Let's have a look at question two. Okay, and I obviously went through all those questions. How many bits do you have for the hosts? How many bits do you have for the networks? How many bits do you have for the subnet? Now, I'd recommend that you guys write this into your file at some point, and if you happen to be there and you're doing it right now, that's fine. But if you're not, I'd recommend that you write it in yourself, because this will be useful to you as a study aid. I know how many bits there are, but then again, I've been subnetting for longer than you guys, so it might actually help to write that stuff out and write out all of the subnets and stuff, which will be tedious. I'm not arguing that, but it may actually help it to sink in a bit better, and should only take about 5 minutes or so, and you'll be able to look back at it and read back down over it. If you are lucky enough to own a Braille display, you find that subnetting is much easier if you look at a lot of this on a Braille display. I never used to use a Braille display, but I must say that doing binary on a Braille display is a lot easier than doing it with speech, because you don't have the ability to read it. Although, that said, you could also use your pet abacus to do binary, because you could just use one of the slide rows, especially the one up the top, and then just assume that if the beads were slid up, they were a 1, if they were slid down, they were a 0. So that's, you could use the top row of the abacus for that. So there's another thing you could do if you do happen to abacus at your house. Yes, Alex? No, the subnet mask is... I've just been asked whether the subnet masks are different for each 25 machines. The subnet mask stays the same across the whole subnetting exercises. The network address varies. Okay, ready for the next question, guys?
Mm-hmm. This is the one with 300 machines.
The company has used the 172.16.4.0 /24. Subnet to house machines. They now have 300 machines to put on that subnet. The IT department wants to expand the existing subnet because they're interested in playing World of Warcraft. They're not interested in renumbering their machines. What are they going to do it? Can anybody apart from Aaron and Kevin, who would know, tell me?
I have a question.
Yes.
So why can't they put all 300 of these machines on the subnet right now? Isn't this a Class B address? They've got lots and lots.
No. Read what's written after the 172.16.4.
/24. Okay, never mind. What are they... Okay.
That's all right, Grace. It's late at night.
Yeah. No, that's okay. It's important to realise that there are... these exercises are somewhat contrived. They need to be. By default, the 172.16 is actually a Class B network. You're correct there. But the company may have only been given the 172.16.4... /24 subprefix. Now, it just so happens that 172.16 is actually a reserved IP address and is not publicly routable. But let's just, we're just pretending here. So, and in fact, I think you would have to pay somebody a lot of money and be very nice to exactly the right people to even consider being delegated a Class C in 2009.
I had to jump through all sorts of hoops just to get a /28.
Yeah. We have an IP address shortage at the moment, and they are very frugal about their handouts, which is a bit annoying considering that CSIRO has got 12 Class Bs. Okie dokie. Now, can anybody apart from Kevin and Aaron tell me how many IP addresses are we going to have on this subnet to fit 300 machines? What is the power of 2 that will allow us to have 300 machines? That'd be about right. Means we should probably... and they're probably not going to do anything about it either. But of course, eventually we'll all soon move to IPv6, like we've been saying for the past 6 years, and then we'll all be able to get /48s, and we'll have more IP addresses than we'll ever need, and then we'll find out that everybody shouldn't have got /48s, and then they'll be held to pay because they've been handing out blocks that were too big. Okay, what is the power of 2 that will allow us to have... So which power of 2 will allow us to have 300 addresses? And what is the power of 2 in the numerical value that will actually give us that number of addresses?
512 addresses to the power of 9.
We have one answer. Anybody else want to give me an answer? Mm-hmm. We have an answer from Alex. Yep. Does anybody not know how we're getting this answer?
Sorry, Kerry, I missed your question.
I just said, does anybody know how we're getting this answer? Does anybody not know how we're getting this answer? Yeah, I heard your phone ringing in the background there.
Yeah, I've just come back. And I know how I can explain to you how I actually got the answer.
I figured it out once I figured out how to use a calculator. Sorry about that.
Okie dokie. And if you hadn't been using a calculator, which is okay for you to use at this point, although if you're going for CCNA certification, they're going to take your calculator away and stamp on it, you would say 256 is 2 to the power of 8, 256 and 256, 200 and 200 is 400, 56 and 56 is 112, therefore it is 512, which is 2 to the power of 9. However, hopefully they won't be stamping on your calculator for another year or two. Note the calculators may not actually be stamped on, they might be just dropped in a garbage disposal chute. Okay, 2 to the power of 9 is 512. Can anybody tell me what the slash number on the end of the IP addresses we're going to have would be if we are having 512 IP addresses? It'll be slash what? No. Does anybody want to know how we do this?
Yes, please.
All right. You have an IP subnet which is slash 24. You have an IP address which is slash 24. It's a class C. You want another bit in the host portion. How many bits are you going to have on your host portion? You're going to have 9 bits on your host portion. 9 and what is 32?
23.
That is correct. All of the bits that you have always have to add up to 32. You can only allocate bits to networks, borrow bits for subnetting, or allocate bits to hosts. So whatever you're doing, those three numbers always have to add up to 32. Okie dokie. Now, so everybody happy with that, or relatively happy with that for the moment? Okie dokie. So, we have... Can anybody give me the valid IP address range for the 512 address subnet, given that the original IP address is 172.16.4.0?
Wouldn't it be 1 to 511?
No, because you can only have 256 in any octet. Okay, did you guys want me to give you the answer to this one? Because I think people are not too cool with this question.
Well, I'd kind of like to know how it works.
Yeah, okay. We have a network address of 172.16.4. And we actually have 2 bits being used. We actually have 2 bits being used for the network portion, because we actually have an address, a subnet that has 512 addresses. So we actually have one of the bits that would have been used for networks for actually to be used for hosts. So what we have is a range of 172.16.4.0 to 172.16.5.255, even. But yeah, so our usable range is 172.16.4.1 to 172.16.5.254. Because we've actually borrowed bits to use for hosts, it means we actually have a subnet that spans the byte boundary.
So we're doing the reverse of what we did in the last exercise.
Yes, you're doing the reverse and you're actually making them bigger than what the actual byte is. So in the last exercise you had 32 address subnets, so you had 32, 64, 128, 192, etc. 160, 192. Okay. And you're right, you could go to 511, but the fact is that you can't write 511 in a binary byte, which is what I'm telling you. You have to actually, you are correct, if you actually look at the bit pattern, it is 0 to 511, but you have to actually put that into the IP address in the bit positions that are necessary, and actually look at what the octets come out to look like when you do that. Any questions on that? Anybody got any comments, questions?
So what is the actual subnet for that then?
Yeah, I know. I'll talk to you later, Alex, if you're still lost by the time I'm finished explaining. Sorry, what was your question, Grace? What is the subnet range?
No, what's the actual subnet mask for that? How do you figure
that out? Okay, the actual subnet mask is if you take a binary number and you put 23 ones on the left-hand side and 9 zeros on the right-hand side.
Okay, so I just have a, you just have to convert that from binary to decimal, or, yeah, that's what you're
which would be 255.255.254.0.
Because I've only taken away one bit.
That's exactly right. This is why if you can get your hands on a pegboard, and I'm saying this to all the students, you can actually make these up on the pegboard and put 9 pegs in the left-hand side, in the right-hand side, and 23 holes in the left-hand side, and it'll actually make it easier for you to see how it lays out. Of course, nobody quite gets around to getting anybody to drill them a pegboard, and then they struggle through it all, and then you drop a pegboard in front of them, and they go, "Oh, wow, that's easier." So the other... Yeah, no, it's a good idea. There's pictures up in general instructions on the website. The other thing my friend used to do, and this is a bit of a silly way of doing it, but it's kind of a good idea. If you put your fingers on the rows of your keyboard, and you have 4 fingers on your left hand and 4 fingers on your right hand, don't worry about your thumbs too much, you can actually drop your fingers down onto the keys so that you can feel which bits are set and which bits are cleared. And then if you figure out which fingers you've got down and which fingers you've got up, that's how you can work out what the binary number is going to be. It's a bit of a silly way of doing it, but it's one of the methods that one of our students had. Okay, now the biggest thing that confuses people with this question is that they start panicking because it's not on a nice byte boundary. There's not a dot on one side and a dot on the other side of their subnet boundary. Because the boundary is not on a byte boundary, it's actually on an arbitrary bit boundary. People find it hard to visualize. And that's why I put this question in, because the subnet mask only tells you how many bits are for the network portion and how many bits for the host portion. There is no rule in classless inter-domain routing that says that that breakdown can't be on a boundary that is not a multiple of 8. So you can have you can have 23 bits in the network portion, you can have 22 bits in the network portion, you can have 13 bits in the network portion. Okay, so what we end up with is we end up with a subnet range of 172.16.4.0 to 172.165.255. Now, if necessary, and I'd suggest anybody who's having trouble with this one to take that range down, you are going to have to convert that into binary and actually work out where the subnet boundary occurs, which will be the first 23 bits, and what actually happens with that ninth bit, and actually write it all out, and then come back and talk to me about it and make sure that sort of sinks in. So we'll certainly go back over that at some point. Anybody got any trouble with that question? Because I think that was all I wanted you to do for that one.
Here's an interesting
question.
Yep, go, Grace.
So if I were to add another 8 bits or 9 bits to go over the boundary, it would be 6, right?
Yes, and it would go from 6 to 7. The subnet, the next subnet would go from 6 to 7.
Right.
Oh, look out. You might be learning something here.
An interesting question for you all. Is 172.16.4.255 a valid IP address?
Why not? Oh, never mind. It would be 254, wouldn't it? Because 255 would be the...
It is.
It is. Yeah, Scott's wrong. And this is what Aaron's trying to trip you up on. Just because an IP address ends in .255 doesn't mean that it's an invalid IP address. So, for example, if you're using a class B, if you're using a class A mask of say 10. Whatever, 10.2.255.255 is a valid IP address in that thing. Just because it says 255 doesn't mean that it isn't a valid IP address. You've got to actually look at the mask to make that assertion. A broadcast address is only where all of the host bits are set to 1.
Same applies for 172.16.5.0.
Yes, that is a valid IP address as well.
So the one that would be invalid would be the 254.
The one that would be invalid would be the 172. Well, it's not invalid, it's the broadcast address. 172.16.5.255. And 172.16.4.0 would be the network address. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm not saying that the addresses are invalid as in... Oh, somebody just SMS'd me. Okay, I'll check that later. All right. Any questions with that one? Anybody got anything that's brought up for them that they think is a bit confusing? The subnet mask is 255, 255, 254.0. All righty. Now, is this becoming any clearer to people? I'm just curious because... okie dokie. Alright, has everybody had enough or we'll do the next one? Alrighty, Chris is securing his home network after some unfortunate incidents with his housemates. Okay, now this is just a generic Chris, it's not the Chris that we all necessarily know. He's decided to split his Class C subnet into two subnets containing 32 hosts. The one network is for him, and the rest of them is for the rest of the housemates. So that's just how he works. In other words, he's going to have 32 addresses, and then they're all going to have to share 32 addresses, because that's just how Chris is. Okie dokie. First question, has he wasted IP addresses on his Class C?
Absolutely.
And we don't know how many housemates he has.
Well, yeah, that's right. But let's assume that he has 3 or 4 housemates. But, yeah, he's wasted addresses, okay? It's bad to waste addresses, okay? You shouldn't waste addresses, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Mackey.
Yeah. Well, it's a MAC address, isn't it?
that's true.
So he has wasted addresses. And, in fact, he's used... maybe a quarter of his Class C allocation thingy that he's got there. But, yeah, that's what he's done. And so we know that the... can anybody tell me where the first address would start at? What would the address of the first subnet... range of the first subnet be?
192.168.0.1231?
Yep, you're correct. Yes, Chris should use VLSM. which is variable length subnet masking, which is the stuff that I've essentially been showing you guys. What you do with VLSM, just so that you know, is that there is no rule that says in today's networking age that all of the subnets have to be of the same size. So, for example, what Chris should have done was perhaps create a subnet that has 8 addresses for him and another one that has, say, 16 addresses for all his housemates once they've got all their computers and wireless laptops and things on. And the reason we do that is to maximize the usage of IP addresses rather than to make sure that we've got these whopping big subnets with IP addresses that aren't in use. So there you go. Anybody got any questions on that one? Because I don't think I actually gave you an IP range for that one, but we just assumed the default home range and that's all good. So 0 to 31. All right, so somebody other than Grace, what would the second subnet be? What would be the range of the second subnet?
32 to 63?
Yep. Okie dokie. Now, what have we got left here? All right, Jenny's writing peer-to-peer software, which will probably give Trevor quite a chuckle, because I don't think Jenny's going to write peer-to-peer software anytime soon. However, her peer-to-peer software is in alpha stage, which means it does horrible things to networks. She needs to keep packets off the main network, and she needs 12 addresses. Assume the supernet is 192.168.25.0, and we want the range of a subnet that will suit her, and her router is on one, the actual router for the whole supernet is on 192.168.25.1, so we're not going to put her on that range. First of all, can anybody tell me how many IP addresses does she need to have 12 machines on the subnet? Yes. Yes, 14 IP addresses, which is, for all of the addresses, including the network and broadcast, what would that be? /28. And that would be 16 IP addresses with 14 being usable. Remember that 32 minus 4 is 28, which is how Aaron got his /28. Alright, so let's assume that she can't use the first subnet because the main home router is on there. Can anybody give me the range for the second subnet that she could potentially use?
That start at 8 or 9 or something?
No, these are 16 address subnets, so obviously it's got to be a multiple of 16. Yes, Grace, you are 100% correct. Alright, everybody have any questions on that one?
The last bit in the subnet mask should be 240.
That is correct. Which is because 256 minus 16 is 240. Alrighty, I think that's probably enough. I'm going to leave you guys to do the scenario question on your own. Now that we've done all of those together, I want to see the answers to the scenario question by next week, and that's the one about busy builders, and we're going to talk about it next week in the discovery lecture. Is everybody feel they've made some progress today in the whole subnetting jiggery-pokery stuff? Because I hope that there are some people who maybe have got things a little bit clearer and can now consider attempting that scenario question in the next week or so. And, of course, if you have any questions on that, you can, of course, either mail CAVI instructors or mail the mailing list. I'm not refusing to answer your questions by any stretch of the imagination, but I do have to make you guys think, which reminds me of a very sad joke, which is, why are students like pieces of string? They are slack, but they can be taught. Okay, it was a bad joke, and I wouldn't say that any of you guys are slack, but I do have to make you guys do some of the thinking, because if I give you all the answers, you won't get into the processes and stuff. Alrighty. Is there anything anybody else wants to talk about? Because that's pretty heavy. I think we've had some very heavy lectures in the last couple of weeks, and I vote next week for a lecture that's a little bit lighter, because these are a bit wild. And we'll talk about, say, for example, the difference between switches and routers and MAC addresses and IP addresses and the very run over the layers of the OSI reference model and stuff. So unless there's anything else anybody wants me to run through today, I might actually finish it up there. And we'll come back and do some of this stuff next week. Yeah, we can jump up and down for pizza if you want. Doesn't mean you're going to get it, though. Does anybody have anything else they want to discuss before we close down lecture for today? Any other burning questions that people have got? I think Sriginth had a question, but he's not on today, so we'll have to catch him when he's on. Yeah, right.
Guys, 5 and 6 are really not that bad. You can probably do them without the diagram descriptions. I did.
Do them without the diagram descriptions for 5 and 6. Just do them.
I mean, the 1 and 6 is so obvious that, like, you don't even need a diagram. I'm not even sure. They're like, look at the diagram of the router and tell us this. And if you seriously don't know what they're asking you about, read the notes again, because it's so unbelievably obvious. I'm sorry. Oh, no, that was 7. Never mind. 7's totally obvious, not 6.
Yeah, basically what happens, Scott, is nobody wants to do diagram descriptions. It's time-consuming, it's painful, and all of our volunteers want to do everything but diagram descriptions. And we're not allowed to, threaten people with all sorts of things to make them to do diagram descriptions. Now that Gemma has finished her assignment, however, her and I may sit down and do some of the diagram descriptions, because they do need to be done. It's just nobody is stepping forward to do it. And certain people have promised 2 weeks ago that they'll do them, and it hasn't happened.
I'm just going to add a little bit for people who may be considering doing certification in the future. It's a good idea, if you are, even though it's fantastic that we have access to all the Cisco material and there's diagram descriptions being done and that sort of thing, it is a fantastic idea to start training up a sighted person to understand what the different things in Cisco diagrams mean, because when you go to do the certification exams, you will not have any diagram descriptions, and if you don't supply a reader, Pearson VUE will organise one for you who has no knowledge of Cisco at all. And with the amount of time you have to do the exam, you will not pass. So it's a very good idea to start working with a sighted person so that they at least have a basic knowledge of how things work in the diagrams, what the different symbols mean and that sort of thing, so that they can come to the exam with you and be your reader.
You get to bring in your own reader? That's unbelievable.
You get to fight with them for any sort of accessibility. Pearson VUE are incredibly difficult to deal with, and most of their people have no clue what they're talking about, so you end up telling them what they're going to do.
That's a lot easier than the other way around, where they do know it, or at least they think they know what they're talking about, so yeah.
They may be better in America, you may have more luck than I did, but certainly in Australia they're completely and utterly useless.
I'd just like to point out that there is ongoing work between the Cisco Learning Institute and Pearson, which wasn't ongoing when Aaron did his exams, and we are hoping to streamline the process to a large extent. Pearson and the Cisco Learning Institute are very keen to see this work, but they also have to make sure that any of their accessibility modifications do not in any way compromise the CCNA qualification, because it is highly regarded, and if somebody could argue that that it had been compromised, it may potentially, in their eyes, devalue the qualification.
Yes. Well,
does Aaron have his
Sorry. Yes, I do, and that's very good to hear. With respect to the ongoing communication, I hope that when future students go through, that they'll have an easier time of it than I did. Because I didn't even manage to get any extra time, so I finished the CCNA exam literally with 5 seconds to spare.
And we are certainly working on getting some extra time, because that would be very handy. Absolutely, and that work is ongoing. And we are working on getting accessibility to the textbooks and stuff. I had a chat to their book division, whether it will actually do anything, but we actually had a conference, and I humbly requested that the book division consider allowing us to pay for accessible copies of the Cisco curriculum. Otherwise, our alternative would be to obtain them by other means, and we'd really prefer not to do that, and we'd really prefer that they have our money. All right, everybody, I think that's about it for today. Nothing else pending?
I haven't heard that website talked about, learntosubnet.com, I think it is.
Yeah, I've never looked at it, because I know how to subnet. But yeah, there is a learntosubnet.com, and apparently it's quite good.
I've had a little bit of time on it, and I really should think I should spend more time on it and get off doing some of the other things I've been doing, but it is a good site.
Yeah, so anybody who wants any practice, go and have a look at www.learntosubnet.com. There were some resources posted up in the Lister archives a couple of years back, and I hadn't actually been back to look for them. Has anybody not been to the List archives? Because there are archives, and one of the things you'll find is that when we all went through in 2007, the first time through, we actually had a group of students who were much more vocal and active on the mailing lists, and there's some absolute gold in those List archives from students debating things and talking about things and providing information. And the archives in Mailman are exceedingly accessible, in my opinion. I don't know how they could be more accessible, but it might actually be worth taking a look through the posts, for example, on 2007. And for those of you who feel that the only thing that defines accessibility is a text file, yes, you can download the archives month by month in a text file. And put them onto whatever device you happen to have that reads text files. So definitely have a look through the 2007 archives of CAVI Discuss. As we've moved forward, unfortunately, the student mix that we currently have is less likely to post to the mailing list. I'm not sure why that is. Perhaps they don't feel comfortable with the concept of a mailing list. I'd really encourage people to make use of that mailing list resource. If you have a question that you have on the course material or a point that you're clarifying and you don't have direct access to an instructor, posting to that mailing list, if you can phrase your question, will get you an answer from probably about 8 knowledgeable people. And one of them will come back and tell you an answer to your question or help you clarify as, for example, I think it was, I can't remember who it was the other day, but one of the Indians posted a question and Aaron had a response back for him very quickly. Sometimes I'll come back with a response, sometimes Dean will come back with a response, there'll be all sorts of people that will come back with a response. Those mailing lists are for you, they're not for me. I'd prefer to shut them down and save the server resources. But do make use of them because they are very, very handy and they will get you access to a pool of experts. And if you're going to ask questions in a computer field, you need to be comfortable and practiced at asking questions on online forums, whether they be web-based or mailing list-based or live text chat, as well as being able to talk to people. And it's a very important skill to have and a very important communication skill to be able to phrase up your question, ask it, and then receive an answer.
Yeah, and take advantage of us, of those of us who are on the discuss and announce list that don't see the CAVI instructor list.
Guys, I've got to go quickly.
Work in the field.
Okay, bye.
Okay. I'll mute it anyway.
No, just go. If you're going, you're going. There's a recording. See you later. Right, that's that done. Yeah, do take advantage of the people who are on the CAVI Discuss mailing list. It is an excellent resource, and we do try to answer as many questions as we can. we will try and answer the question to the best of our ability, and we try to make sure that our advice is as accurate as it can be. Of course, no warranty is either expressed or implied to the merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose of the advice. If the advice causes your computer to melt down, destroy your neighbour's dog, or explode your local neighbourhood, we will not be held responsible. However, we do our best to answer the questions as well as we can. And the answers we put in go into the archives. Actually, to be honest with you, Aaron, I hadn't added you to the Cavi Instructors alias because I figured you would appreciate a quieter inbox.
Yeah, it's probably... I mean, I'm not officially an instructor. I'm sort of... For those of you who haven't encountered me before, I'm hanging around as kind of a favour to... the Covey instructors who allowed me to go through the course at a much quicker rate, and also gave me a lot of support with some of the stuff that hadn't been put into accessible format. I spent a lot of time with Ian working through different things with the bundle and that sort of thing, so that hopefully you guys, when you go through, get a smoother time of it.
Alrighty, so I think that's about it for today. If anybody has anything, if you don't know how to post to the mailing lists, we can possibly send a mail out on how to do that. If you don't know, you all were subscribed to Cavi Discuss and Cavi Announce as part of your sign-up procedure. If you are not on the mailing list, I need to know, and I need to know why. It is a requirement that you are on Cavi Announce. It is highly suggested that you are on Cavi Discuss. If, however, for some reason that you do not wish to be on Cavi Discuss, you can unsubscribe yourself and you can read the list archives. But there will be important things that do go through on Cavi Discuss that it is important that you see. And obviously, people will have seen, you should be seeing a couple of messages per week going to Cavi Announce to tell you that lecture audio and stuff is available. Has everybody been seeing those?
Yeah.
Okie dokie. All right, have a good one, everybody. I think we're done. And I'm just about to hit stop on the recording. And there is currently no Thursday chat planned for tomorrow.